Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Rapid Response Collaborative call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone requires assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this conference is being recorded. And now, ladies and gentlemen, your host for today's conference, Hillary Jalon. You may begin.
Thanks so much, and thank you everyone for joining us. We have a great group here today with us on this August afternoon, and we really appreciate your participation. With me right now is Rachel Block and Zeynep Sumer and Dr. Mark Rosen. Carrie Straub will be joining momentarily. We just wanted to let you know this conference call is structured with two different parts. The first part, a lot of you have been saying you want to start talking a little bit more about the safety culture or climate surveys and some of the hospital's experiences with administering these surveys. We had a couple of conference calls on this in the past, and now we figure we're about 7 months into the portion where we started talking about the safety climate surveys, so we want to see where some hospitals have gone with some of their activities. So we have a great panel, which I'll introduce in a second. But before that, we want to let you know that the second part of the call, we're going to go back to Rapid Response. And last night, when you were looking at your email or this morning, you probably got a surprise hospital-specific draft data report, which contained your hospital-specific data and aggregate data for the Rapid Response Collaborative. Dr. Rosen and Terry will be going through that report with you to explain the components of it. Just we want to make note to you that this did not go to your hospital CEO. This went to the hospital teams, and we want to start it as a discussion point for sharing monthly reports with you. So Dr. Rosen will be going through those data elements on the reports with you and Terry. So before we get to that, though, I'll introduce the group of people that are on the line with me today. We're going to talk. They're going to give about a five-minute overview of their process for implementing the safety, climate, or culture surveys. And then we have some questions that we're going to ask the group as well. But we have Beth Doozy. Beth is the Director of Patient Safety at NYU Hospital Center, and they've done quite a bit of work in this area, as has Jennifer Edwards at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She's the manager of patient safety program there. I don't know if Eva Johansson has joined the line from St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital, but she's the assistant vice president for quality, and if she's there, we'll talk about her work, their work at St. Luke's in this area. And finally, Margot Luizzo and the Jamaica Hospital Medical Center team will describe some of their beginning work with the Safety Climate Survey at Jamaica. So, Beth, if you wouldn't mind giving a brief overview of your work at NYU.
Sure. We at NYU participated in a Stanford research project where they were doing surveying hospitals in 2004 and then again in 2006, giving them the opportunity to do an intervention, which was executive walk-arounds. We did implement executive walk-arounds based on our results, so even though we were supposed to have been in the control group, we accidentally put the intervention into place anyway. So in 2004, we signed up. We actually surveyed in February to April of 2005 because we joined the initiative late, and our data got reported in the 2004 database, and then in 2006 we went very late into 2006 and into 2007 to give us an opportunity to have about the same time interval between surveys. We were one of 93 participating hospitals. We randomly sampled 10% of all employees, 100% of our physicians, and 100% of our senior management as a participant in the research. That was consistent across all the organizations. We had a low response rate both times. It was 27.3% in 2004 and 21.3% in 2006. Nationwide, they were seeing about a 50%, and they went down to 37% in 2006. Not sure what that was, but we were questioning if maybe people are starting to get survey fatigue because there are so many surveys being conducted. The reason that we participated in this survey is Stanford's goal was to find out how far away are we from being high reliability organizations? And they have a definition of that that includes awareness of risks, being committed to safety even at the expense of production pressures, organizational norms and policy support, errors and problem reporting, management provides the necessary resources, and unsafe acts are rare. So their tool is designed to determine if you are in the HRO category, and as you can see from who's participating, like senior management, physicians, and employees, it is not just frontline workers, but it's all the people that are in the mission of delivering care. So what we learned in 2004 is that senior management and the supervisors had a more positive attitude about our safety environment at the hospital than did the frontline workers. The frontline workers perceived that leadership was not aware of safety threats, and because of that, we implemented executive walk-arounds to connect the senior-level management to the frontline workers. Then in 2006, we had our data showed a flip. We had the frontline workers having the most positive perception of safety and the senior management not being as informed. And what we thought is that the now the senior managers were getting to the front lines and beginning to see what the problems were, and so they had more of an awareness and less of a comfort zone that we were being safe. And now the frontline workers saw that the senior leaders were coming around and had more of an awareness and felt more of a comfort level. If somebody knows about this, then we're probably better in the safety zone. In the 2006 survey, we found that physicians were the discipline that had the highest safety concerns. That had been in the past, it was nursing. So we also saw that as a change. We weren't sure how to explain that. And the area that had the greatest improvement, which was 8.2 percentage point improvement on safety, was our intensive care unit. The national average was 0.5 point decrease, and we saw an 8.2 point climb. What we attribute that to is that in the about a year prior to the second survey being taken, we put 24/7 intensivists into the ICUs, and we think that made a huge impact. I mean, they were blown away at Stanford with our improvement in that arena. So they think that we probably, we are attributing that to our intensivist coverage, made a huge impact on safety. The areas that declined were the emergency room, general med-surg units, and we attribute that to the fact that we were seeing over census in those areas, and as soon as you begin to see the census taking overwhelming the staffing or the resources, you begin to come out of the safety zone, and we think that that was easily explained. And then the areas that had the highest concerns about patient safety in our 2006 surveys were the ERs, the PACUs, and labor and delivery. All of those areas were the ones that had census problems that were overwhelming them. The areas that seemed to actually that had a higher rate in our institution of seeing themselves as being safe were on the general med-surg units, and then in it was labor and delivery that had felt safer. I'm sorry, it was the ORs that were feeling that they were not as safe. So it was the general med-surg units and the PACU, labor and delivery, that felt they were safer, and then the other three areas that were more problematic than the rest of the nation were the ER the ER, the PACU, and labor and delivery were the ones that were safer. I'm sorry. And it was the general med-surg units and the ORs that rated lower. So I think actually I screwed that up again. I'm sorry. At any rate, we saw some of the areas improve and some that did not. My graph is kind of small here. So what did we find out overall from this assessment? We found out that 46% of the items showed improvement, that we were safer, but 54% had not. So we were, you know, not making as much improvement as we wanted. The areas where we did improve that we were concerned about and where the focus of our rounds were non-punitive response to errors and that senior management was connected to the front lines, and we saw definitive improvements in that. Those are the areas where we made the strides. Where did we decline and we think we need to focus? How are we using the information coming up? They didn't feel that the most qualified individuals are able to make the safety initiatives regardless of rank. It's, you know, we're still very hierarchical, and we're going to advance that that has become one of the things that the senior leadership is saying now. They want to empower the frontline workers. The other thing is we need unit-based safety recognition programs and better initiatives for learning from safety. So aside from screwing up who got better and worse, those were the main initiatives that we're going to be taking on in the upcoming year.
Thank you, Beth. That was a really great overview. And as the participants can see, NYU Hospital Center has some experience with this. They've gone hospital-wide with it. And now we'll see Jennifer Edwards at Memorial had a little bit of a different approach to this. Jennifer, would you mind giving a short overview
Sure. Of
your work?
Sure. So I came here about 2 years ago, and prior to my arrival, the institution had already completed a survey of every department, inpatient, outpatient, and they worked very hard to get a very complete picture of how we were doing on safety and teamwork at the time. I believe it started because of some of the clinicians who had been through some patient safety training knew that this would be a valuable tool to bring in leadership along. So I think that this was part of our journey to become more aware of safety perceptions in the institution, and it was very effective at doing that. We had a 70% response rate across the institution to the survey, and we did it with Brian Sexton, and he did the analysis along with an analyst in our statistics department and presented some wonderful charts that showed department by department variation across these questions around safety and teamwork, perceptions of hospital support for safety, and also willingness to reveal errors. That initial snapshot that was shared with hospital leadership in early 2005 provided the impetus for work that was happened almost a year later when we got some more patient safety staff on board. For example, one of the surprising findings was how unsafe the pharmacy felt. Pharmacists reported not feeling as if there was a lot of teamwork going on or a lot of intra-unit cooperation and safety. And so some work began the bigger picture is that we began working in those units that had particularly worrisome scores. And what's rolled out over the past 2 years then is sort of unit-by-unit safety efforts and remeasuring just in those units. So we have not gone back to the institution-wide survey. We probably will in the next year. But in the meanwhile, I've got 5 or 6 units where we've been doing some work, and so we've resurveyed the staff. Just in that unit, we get 100% participation because we do the survey at the in a session that involves all the staff. In addition to the pharmacy group I mentioned, Sloan Kettering participated in a multi-site survey, a study of teamwork in the operating room. And so as part of a collaboration with a few other institutions, we surveyed all of our OR staff in May 2006 and then just again in May 2007 and had some really fascinating results comparing the views of surgeons, anesthesiologists, and nurses. And as you'd expect, that people, depending on where they sit, might experience teamwork differently. We're pretty hierarchical, as I suppose most places are. But yet, the time between May 2006 and May 2007, we actually got better, got safer in 11 out of the 12 main areas that the survey measures. And so that made us feel a little bit better, except that we didn't really change very much. We basically raised people's awareness, and then we had some leadership turnover in that department, and a lot of the plans for enhancing teamwork through briefings and debriefings, a lot of the safety work that was on in the planning stages never got implemented. And so the fact that we got safer in 11 out of the 12 dimensions without changing very much, it sends a little bit of a message that, partly it's just people need to feel like we're paying attention to these things. And it sort of draws into question a little bit whether the survey is a sensitive enough measure of safety. Nonetheless, we're still plunging ahead, and now this year we're in a better position to implement some of those OR changes that were planned. The other areas that we're working in are interventional radiology. We had some signals from other safety measures that we were monitoring that they were having some problems, and so we're starting some teamwork training there. And then the last area is that we took one inpatient unit in the hospital and blitzed them with a couple of days of safety education, had them do the survey at baseline. They then went off in teams to identify priority areas to improve, and they've rolled out a really terrific falls initiative now, and I expect that when we remeasure them that they'll be able to tell us there's a very high level of commitment to safety in their area. So that's how we're using this. It was the one-time big rollout and then more targeted efforts as we have initiatives underway.
Thanks so much, Jennifer, and it just sounds like you've really used the data to make some improvements there. Is Eva Johansson on the line? No, she must not be with us. So, Margo, if you're ready, Margo took a little bit of a different approach to this. Jamaica Hospital just started with this, but we thought that we would have Margo online because they did a really great job at piloting this, and the safety climate survey, which we recommended for use in the Rapid Response Collaborative, and they've already started to make some changes based on the results in certain units. So, Margo, whenever you're ready.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. What had happened is we had joined a collaborative in the fall of 2006, and we were hoping to roll out the Rapid Response team shortly thereafter, as soon as possible. During one of your conference calls, it was recommended that prior to doing anything like that, we should do the culture safety survey. So we looked at a few survey samples, and we decided to stay with the IHI sample. What we rolled it out to, just the two units that were going to be the pilot units for the rapid response. That was one medical unit and one surgical unit. We then aggregated that data and gave it to each of the chairman in those departments. We gave the nursing nursing don, or the VP of nursing. We gave it to our VP of regulatory affairs, our chief operating officer, and respiratory was also surveyed during that time since they were on the team. We later we added the L&D group. We weren't thinking of doing them at first, but they wanted to be a part of the RRS. So we got them involved. We did a survey in March of this year with them. And the scores were not what we had hoped for in any arena, but it was the Department of Obstetrics that jumped on it right away. The vice chairman would be speaking today, except that he's on vacation. He started a culture of safety committee up in the L&D. They're all over the board with looking at things that they can improve. They started with a herbs palsy drills. They're doing getting ready to roll out some hemorrhage drills. The latest thing they did, and it was only distributed today, was they looked at that safety survey and came up with some questions from the survey, but posed a little differently, where the staff could participate in what they perceive as solutions to why some of the things they're feeling are unsafe. So that's being issued right now. Pat DeAndrea is with me. She's on that committee, and they're giving the staff 2 weeks to return the surveys. What we did was we went to grand rounds in medicine and surgery to distribute those surveys, and those people that were not present, we sent mailings to their homes or their offices in those two departments. In L&D, a smaller group, so those who were not present at the grand rounds had theirs distributed in their mailboxes on site. Nursing, we sent locked boxes to the medical floors and the surgical floors, because from other surveys we found that people are more comfortable if they know that they're anonymous in their responses, and they tend to be a little more honest. So we have locked boxes that are labeled for each service, and that is actually how we executed the surveys. So we're hopeful that this Dr. Inglés will be our champion, and we will we did bring this up to our Performance Improvement Council, so we're in our infancy right now with this.
Thanks a lot, Margo.
Okay.
Actually, before we open it up for a few questions, I just have some for everyone who spoke a bit. This is a real nuts and bolt question, and it's really geared toward the how-to of this. And Margo, you kind of went through that talking about the lock boxes, but some people on some hospitals on the line have not yet embarked on this territory. So first of all, are you administering a paper survey, all three of you? And if you are, could you give suggestions for beefing up the response rate and getting as many responses as possible? Did you do that at a unit-specific level? What was your process for administering the survey and getting a significant or a substantial response rate? So, Beth, I'll start with you.
Okay. We only, if you take it between the two surveys, we had about a 25% response rate on average. So we had a really poor response rate, and we had mailings that went out from the company that was doing the surveys for us, because that was a part of the research project that we signed up for. So I was going to ask Jennifer how she got her response rate so high, because it seems to me if maybe an internally administered survey might be better. That was one of the questions that we had as a participant. If we had administered ourselves, does that make it better or worse? And certainly with our response rate of about 25%, although we were on the lower end of respondents, we were not pleased with our response rate. But I don't know. We did do three mailings. It was three waves. It went to the person's home outside of the institution because the focus was on anonymity. But again, we were surveying physicians and administrators and frontline staff, and physicians are notoriously low responders, but still we were below those, and everybody else was surveying the same number of physicians or percentages within their organization.
Thanks, Beth. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, do you have anything to add about?
So I think that the original survey of everybody in the institution was before I got here, but what I heard from the analyst who worked on that is that it was a huge amount of her time, that it was a tremendous effort for her to track the whereabouts of every piece of paper that went out, and she followed up with managers and staff to assure that the response rate reached 70%. So we used the biostatistics department here at the hospital to do that. I don't know if that helps people feel as if, it's not my supervisor who's seen this, it's a distant third party, they work in a different building, they don't do patient care. I don't know whether that improved people's willingness to respond to the survey. It is a terrific response rate, but I guess I got the impression it was primarily due to her repeatedly going back and working with people to get the survey submitted. When we do it now, when we do it on a unit-by-unit basis, we close the doors. There's no getting out until you turn in the survey. So it's a captive audience, and that's worked fine.
What? Hello?
Hello.
Terry, you're on.
Thanks. Jennifer, thank you.
Okay.
Margo, do you have anything to add? I know you went through this a little bit in your...
Yes. Just that for the nursing units, what we did, our nursing leaders, our head nurses, meet with the director of nursing monthly. So we distributed the locked boxes that were clearly labeled for each unit along with the surveys, so that this could be coming from the nursing hierarchy, letting people know that it was supported by her. We're not happy with the results of the numbers, but I anticipate that when we start seeing changes, the people will begin to believe us,
mm-hmm.
That we're serious. And again, because of the OB has taken such a jump with their data, and as a matter of fact, they had the lowest scores, both from physician and nursing. And it might be what prompted him to just go ahead and see how he could fix this. I think as we see some changes throughout, people will believe that we are going to address the data.
Yep. Thanks, Margo. And I'll just add one more question, then we'll open it up to the group for questions. It's about leadership. You all talked a little bit about leadership's involvement in this, but just want to know, have they reviewed the results from the survey at your hospitals, and are they working with you to make improvements? So not just the patient safety department, but also leadership. How involved are they at your institution? So, Beth?
The results from the 2006 survey, I mean the 2004 survey, yes, went back to senior leadership. They immediately responded and put the executive walkarounds in. We just got this data back and did the analysis of it in July. So the August meetings have a density below attended. So it is going in the fall to the senior leadership for them to make decisions about what we think we need to be tackling. Although some of the issues were known at the level and senior leadership is already moving in on it, like empowering the most skilled individuals at the bedside and the front lines to be making decisions. That was identified as an organizational problem through other routes. So we think there's going to be a dovetail of information.
Great, thank you. Jennifer, do you have anything to add?
Our senior leadership was definitely involved in looking at the data. I think any of them could tell you what our findings were. They spent a lot of time on it, and we're trying to get back to them about each of the specific units this summer. So I think that they're pretty familiar with the data. I think that the initiative for changes, though, is lie pretty much within the units, not the leadership level.
Okay. And Margo, do you have anything to add?
Yes. Our COO had attended a conference about leadership walkarounds prior to our data being ready. And I had heard from my VP of Regulatory Affairs that he had an interest in leadership walkarounds. So when the data was available, we gave it to him. And he has held two meetings so far with the VP of Regulatory and myself. And he has one coming up with the director or the VP of Nursing. And he definitely wants to begin some walk-arounds based on the data.
Thanks, Margo. And we'll also be doing more work in the future on the leadership walk-arounds. So as you can tell, just based on all three of these speakers, the walk-arounds are very highly connected with the safety culture climate surveys. So rather than me talking operator, we'll see, does anyone have questions for the three panelists?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press the number one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you can do so by pressing the pound key. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press the number one key on your touch-tone telephone, and we'll hold for questions. I show no questions at this time.
Okay. So, I actually just have one more, and then we can go right into the data part. Do any of you have any next steps that you want to share with regard to future work in administering the survey or resurveying staff at the hospital?
This is Beth at NYU. We were advised, I'm trying to remember where this came up in one of the conferences, that you need to, that surveying staff every year may not be meaningful because you have to have time to make changes, and the Stanford model was that you survey every year. So we would like to, again, use the information from the current survey to make the changes, and then I don't know if Stanford will continue to use the survey and do any further research, but we would, in all likelihood, survey again on the even years instead of doing it again this year. There was, if I could, one other thing that came up in the Stanford survey is one of the things they found is that as people began to become very aggressive about implementing safety changes and people increased their awareness, they actually saw a decline in safety perceptions of staff. So one of the things people were kind of discouraged about is we did all this stuff and it got worse, and they feel that that's not a bad indicator, that that's some of the phases you have to go through. So it's interesting that what Jennifer was mentioning, that they didn't really feel like they had done that much, and yet they had improvement in safety attitudes, and that at the Stanford side, the hospitals that seemed to be most aggressively working on it, people had more of a negative perception. So it doesn't seem as if the safety attitudes necessarily go with what you feel as an organization you're doing. They don't move in the same direction necessarily.
That's interesting. Thank you. Jennifer, do you have anything
to
add?
Yeah, I think we will be resurveying this year. It's been a couple of years for us. It's probably closer to a 3-year gap than a 2-year gap because of all the other changes we've been putting in place. I do worry, though, people, if we tell people more about what we're doing, it does maybe increase their anxiety that we're less safe than they thought when they didn't know we were doing anything. I think there's sort of a flipped reaction from what you might expect to see. The more you know, the more you stay awake at night. And so I'm not sure what to do about that. The other thing is that we have some hospital leaders that sort of pick apart the questions and say, why would they feel this way on one and that way on another? I think we need to look hard at whether the instrument is we need to go back and look at what the most reliable instrument is. We're now using the AHRQ survey, but I think that we should see what the literature is showing us on reliability of the various instruments.
Thanks, Jennifer. And Margot, do you have anything to add?
We'll probably survey a year after we've implemented mm-hmm. some things, but I would use the same survey tool so that you're not mixing apples with oranges.
Great. So, Carrie, are you on the line?
I guess
not.
She is.
I was just going to say that was a really good overview from all three of you. We really appreciate it. There's going to be much more discussion on this topic over the next year. We're going to try to identify the best way to approach at the use and administering either safety climate or safety culture survey. One thing we should make note of, in the collaborative, we suggested to start with the safety climate survey, which was on IHI's public website because it was short and easy to use. But we are going to be exploring other options for surveys, such as the ARC survey. So more to come on this topic. We just figured it was a great time to revisit it, since it seems like many people have either started to use a survey or they're going to begin using one. So thank you so much to everyone who was on this panel describing some of their experiences. So we're just going to switch gears now. I know everyone is anxiously awaiting because they got their hospital-specific report. And we're going to have Dr. Rosen go through the report. So if you do have your report and you're on the line available, it's a three-page report. And Dr. Rosen is going to go over the components with you, try to get some of your reactions, and then we'll open up for some questions and some comments about the report. So, Dr. Rosen, whenever you're ready.
Yeah, hi, Hillary. Look, this is Mark. So everybody got their report allegedly last night or this morning. Did anybody not get their report?
We'll find that out.
We'll find that out later. Okay. And later let's all find out if everybody believes their report, because here's what's going to – you know, we're going to – the report – let's just walk through it. And I'm just going to pick a random one out. It will be de-identified, but let's just walk through what's in the report. And we'd be interested in your comments either now or maybe a little later as you have time to digest it, or in some cases get over indigestion if you don't like what you see, as to if you'd like the data presented in other ways, if there are data you think that everybody should be looking at that they don't get. I've got some suggestions myself when I see it. So I'm just looking at everybody's got a three-page report. And I think for the purposes of this discussion, let's start with page three, because everybody's got the same page three. These are the aggregate data for all of the hospitals in the collaborative. For everybody that sent data, it's all summarized here. If you look at the two graphs, Group A is the group that had rapid response systems and teams in place before we started or during the baseline run-in. And what you see is the blue line is the average number of calls, and the brown line is the average number of codes. And I don't know, I don't have the statistical significance, but I could make myself believe that over time, the average number of calls in the collaborative went up, and the average number of codes either stayed the same or trended down a little bit, and it'd be interesting to see. It certainly looks like we had a record reduction in the number of codes in May of 2007, but again, not everybody reported May by the time it was here. This may all change later on as more reporting comes in. In general, when you've got one of these timelines, the last point is the least reliable until all the data come in. So that's the Group A, and if you go on the right, Group A is comprised of major teaching hospitals, 11 non-major teaching hospitals, 3 non-teaching hospitals. I'd like to know later on, is North Shore and LIJ considered major or non-major? I don't even know if we all know what we are considered here. But the data are pretty close, and we have the average number. So this is the benchmark. This is what your individual data could be compared to. If you look at down on the bottom, Group B, they had no rapid response system during the baseline period. It started in October. It cranked up. And we have a curious finding. Remember, the hypothesis is that as one calls more, one should see fewer codes. And what looks like happened in May was lots of calls and lots of codes. And, you know, the folks who are putting this data together told me this is really driven by one hospital. One of the hypotheses was, you know, some lady in the gift shop really got into it. We don't know. I don't think this is ready for publication yet. But in any case, what we do see is certainly in the Group A, where you have the most of the hospitals, there is a trend line that is there that you can use to compare your own hospital with. Now, what this means is, I don't know if you've looked at your data yet, but half the hospitals are going to be better than this, and half the hospitals are going to be worse than this. And I guess this is a good reason to then have a little bit of introspection is, if you're better, why are you better? Are you really better? Maybe there's it's differences in your population, lower risk population, things like that. Or maybe you really are better, and think about what you can do to get even better. For the 50% of the hospitals that are underperforming here, this might be related in part to the population. I know some of you will say, well, you know, everybody in my hospital is 86 years old and should be DNR. And maybe that's for real. And that's just the administration. Kidding. In any case, but the question is, if your code rate is higher, think about why. If the number of calls are lower, it's another reason to think why. Now let's go back to page one. Page one is individual data. Again, the blue is the number of calls by month. If you say that you don't think the data are right, then please correct us. Go back and check, because this is what you report. And the number brown line is the number of codes. Now, again, I looked over several of them, and several of them don't do what they're supposed to do. More calls should translate into fewer codes. Sometimes it didn't work that way. And, you know, we'll probably be asking on an individual level, what do you think accounted for this? Because there's a lot of data here, and there are a lot of lessons to be learned. And I think we ought to try to figure out what's explaining what we're seeing. At the bottom of page one, we have, again, the number of total calls, and the orange is the total mortality in the hospital. Now, remember, if everything works the way it's supposed to and the way we would like it to, and, again, things don't always work the way we want them to, is as the calls go up, perhaps the total death rate will go down. It certainly isn't the case on an individual hospital level. It's happened sometimes, but not in all. And, again, the collaborative data will probably be more meaningful here. Page two really looks at really the performance characteristics in terms of how long does it take for your team to get there and how long do they stay. And I just have looked through a bunch of them, and they seem to be all over the place. Some places the team gets there in 2 minutes and stays a short time. Sometimes they get there in 10 minutes and they stay sometimes for 2 hours on average. And this is probably something you don't already know, but, again, this is something that perhaps you ought to look at. And we don't have benchmarks established for this in terms of what's the average response time and what's the average encounter time, but it might be helpful for each of the individual sites to look at why you're staying for 40 or 60 or 120 minutes when other sites are staying for 5 minutes. It might be specific institutional issues related to work, who you have working there, that if the rapid response group doesn't stay, then there'll be nobody. And perhaps there are other ways to improve it. So that's the data as presented. Again, if you go back to page three, you could look at the benchmarks as they exist for the hospital that meets your hospital's category, major teaching, non-teaching, group A, group B. And remember that group B is small numbers and probably less reliable to use as benchmarks. So with that, I guess we ought to open it up for questions. And I guess the questions I have are there specific questions on how the data are reported? And does anybody have suggestions as to common reporting, graphics or graphs or benchmarks they'd be interested in seeing that are not presented here?
I could say this is Beth from NYU. Am I allowed to jump in first since I'm on? Okay.
Jump.
I have a question on the first page. It's my number of the rapid response calls versus total codes per 1,000 discharges. Is that total or is that out of ICU codes?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer.
Because we never intended to impact on our ICU codes,
correct,
only our out of
right.
ICUs.
Correct.
So that's what I'm wondering.
And my suggestion would be that it ought to be the codes. We the collaborative ought to report the codes that the rapid response teams would go to. In other words, if the rapid response team's not going to go to the ICU, it will never have an impact there,
right,
and shouldn't be reported.
And we don't. So, Hillary, do you know if it's out of ICU codes?
So the what's reported to us is total number of codes where the rapid response team goes to. And that was modified. At first, it was total number of codes. But then after a lot of discussion on the March and April and even May conference calls, we decided the reporting structure of the report was changed so that it was total codes in which the rapid response team had an opportunity to intervene.
Okay. So for us, that would be out of ICU codes, but I don't know if any hospitals have response teams in the ICUs.
I believe some do.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if we could relabel that for total, RRS codes, something like that, because, for me, it does exclude my ICU codes. Other places it wouldn't, I understand that. But it's not my total code, so it's labeled here as it is my total, but it's not.
Right. Raphael, the data person, isn't on the phone right now, but I'll take copious notes here.
Okay.
And we can talk to him about revising these reports.
Or at least something like an asterisk, that the total codes with an asterisk, those places where the team would be expected to respond.
That would be excellent also, that would clarify.
Yeah, that would sort of clarify to everybody that this is what we're looking at, right? This is where the intervention is.
Right, okay.
Anybody else?
Operator, do you want to open it up for questions or comments?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press the number one key on your touchtone telephone. Again, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press the number one key on your touchtone telephone. And our first question is from Lisa Ricker.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. On the same line of the question, as far as the mortality rate, is the total deaths based on the floors that have RRT, or it's total the entire hospital? It goes into the same concern about the total codes as far as ICU and floor. Is the total death the entire hospital or just the areas where RRT goes to?
So
I believe we're only reporting total hospital deaths.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we've been reporting. So it's whatever the collaborative participants report to us, that's the hospital death.
So as far as the ICU, deaths in the ICU, would that be affected with RRT? Should that go down, or should that theoretically go up because patients are getting down there sooner?
Well, we thought about this, and if the point is to reduce mortality in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
If all the RRT does is get people to the ICU to die anyway, it really doesn't accomplish very much.
Okay.
I mean, tell me if anybody disagrees with that. I mean, the idea is you're going to...
Yeah, I totally agree. This is Beth from NYU. I completely agree with that. The other thing is that we don't have the ability to say we had an MRT, we call it MRT, MRT on the floor, the patient went to ICU. Now, if they die in the ICU, how do you take them out? You know, we don't have the ability to track which one of our mortality cases had an MRT call.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to report our total mortality, which is what we are looking to impact on anyway. Because if the patient goes to the ICU and dies there, well, that's, and they may have had a code in the ICU afterwards anyway, that still should be counted as MRT. You don't want to take them out. Mm-hmm. And if you take out your mortality in your ICUs, how do you know which ones had MRTs?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Anything else, Lisa?
No, I think that's it.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question is from Anna Marie Wellings. Your line is open.
Hi, it's Vicki Fiore-Lopez. I'm calling from St. Charles. It was our understanding that we were to report the total number of codes as the number wherever our rapid response team would respond to. If that be the ICU, so be it. But if an institution didn't have the rapid response team arriving at their ICU codes, then they wouldn't record those numbers, include those numbers.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Yeah. Thank you.
And there was a lot of back and forth on the conference calls about that, so that is absolutely correct.
So that's why I was bringing up the point before that this isn't really your total codes. It's only your codes for the MRT responding
right.
areas. So
right.
that's why we wanted to change the title to clarify it. Cause
so the action you selected, it's dependent on the action the hospital selected on the submission form.
That's exactly right, Kathy, if that's you talking.
Yes, it is.
Oh, I'm sorry, Terry. I didn't realize we were turned on.
No, but what you said is correct.
Thank you.
Sure. Operator, is there anyone else?
There are no further questions at this time.
Let me make one suggestion, and that would be one of the things that I thought might improve on this, and tell me if anybody agrees, disagrees, is you have your data. I thought it would be helpful to plot your codes versus the collaborative, your calls versus the collaborative, your deaths versus the collaborative on the same page rather than flipping back and forth.
I think that's a great idea. I was going to ask you, like, how do we now get this to be able to benchmark it? It's hard. I mean, you can print it and compare it side by side, but if we could know exactly where we are in terms of, because it is per thousand, it's a rate, so we should be able to have a comparison to see where we are.
So you mean all on one grid? I just want to make sure that it would be your codes versus the collaborative's codes on one grid, your calls versus the collaborative's calls on another grid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, and the mortalities.
The mortality.
I think Mark said to put it all on one graph. I like that idea.
And it's all per 1,000. You could probably put it all on one piece of paper.
Exactly. I think that would be great because then you're able to see your codes, your mortality, and your calls all in one graph. I think it'll tell a good picture against what the collaborative is doing.
Okay.
But I'm wondering if we should do that by groups A and B. Or you can even do groups A, B, and then roll it up. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that.
Because I think that the group A has been at it longer.
Yep.
So you want to
yep.
benchmark yourself against that crowd that's been out there longer. I think that would be great.
Let me see. Operator, is there anyone that wants to add to that?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you have a question or comment, please press the number one key on your touchtone telephone.
Just remember, everyone, we want to make this report as useful as possible to all of you.
Okay, our question or comment comes from Elise Goldberg. Your line is open.
Hi, Elise.
If your phone is on mute, please unmute it.
Great. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we were going to call an RRT on you.
No, we hear.
I have a quick question. Is anybody collecting any data on the long-term outcome after the patient has an RRT?
So hospitals are doing that, Elise. We aren't really collecting that data for the collaborative. But one thing I should mention, the elements that are included here are all the mandatory elements.
Okay.
There's several of the voluntary elements, which I know you report.
Right.
That we have not done anything with yet because we want to get experience with the hospital-specific reports with the mandatory elements first.
Okay. Only because we started seeing the correlation between the RRT and the patients going to the ICUs and looking at the length of stay in the ICUs versus being discharged home. So I was just curious.
See, these are all very interesting questions because, you know, it's conceivable that, you know, you do an RRT, you save somebody who otherwise would have died and perhaps increase their length of stay to no avail.
Exactly.
I mean, these are unanswered questions, and nobody's willing to say, well, look, let's not do the RRTs because, you know, we might increase length of stay.
Okay.
Well, nobody will say that in public anyway.
Okay. Okay. So we'll shelve it for another time.
That's for another time.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question or comment is from Iris Berman. Your line is open.
Hi. Our question is about your mortality rate. When we're looking at the mortality rates, are we factoring out the DNRs and DNIs when we're looking at our total mortality rate per 1,000?
Mark, do you want me to take a try at that?
Yeah, you take a try because okay. I don't know the answer.
So I could just tell you how we defined mortality in this collaborative, and we defined it the same way as IHI did in their Getting Started kit for the rapid response intervention, which was all hospital mortalities with the exclusion of stillbirths, because many times those aren't reported in hospital information systems anyway, and they shouldn't be counted. So we just used the same criteria that IHI used for that.
All right, so then that means all mortalities, including DNR.
Yeah, and I think that's okay, only because, you know, people do come to the hospital and they do die. And, in fact, fewer codes and more mortalities, and if you know you got more DNRs, you know, that's a positive.
Okay. All right, just want to make sure we're all comparing the same pieces of fruit, apples and apples.
Good point.
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, again, if you have a question or comment, please press the number one key on your touchtone telephone. And I show no further questions or comments at this time.
Okay. Terry, are you there?
No, okay. I actually lost her on her cell phone. Sorry,
that's
Hillary.
That's okay. I was just going to see if she or you, Zainab, have anything to add.
No, I think that's it. I mean, we'll definitely update the reports with these changes.
Yep, we took good notes on some of the comments. Thank you all for your comments. Again, we want to make this report as useful to you as possible. There's one thing I just wanted to follow up with, a comment, Mark, Dr. Rosen, you asked about the major, who's in what group, major teaching, non-major teaching, and non-teaching. We can get a list of that together, too. For our CLABS collaborative, we have the same type of cohort. So that's one thing that can be incorporated into this report as an attachment to who's in which group.
Yeah, that would be nice to see just, you know, one time or more. Okay.
So we'll make appropriate adjustments to this. Again, we wanted to just start the discussion about the report. It hasn't been sent to your hospital CEOs yet, but eventually we want to get a product that we can share with the leadership at each of your hospitals as well. Do you have anything to add, Mark?
No. I thank everybody for their very good questions and constructive comments.
It was really great. Thanks so much, and we appreciate the comments that you gave us. We just have a couple of other housekeeping-type things to go through. We put together a survey of interventions in the Rapid Response Collaborative. Many of you, about 40% of you, have completed it, so thank you so much for doing that. But in order to get the best picture of what's going on in the collaborative, it would be great if we could get, we really want something like an 85% response rate. We did the same kind of survey for the CLABS collaborative, and we got some really interesting results from it. So the more the better, and what we may wind up doing is if some of you don't complete it, we're going to be contacting each of the key contacts to see if we could set up a time to administer it over the phone with you, just because we really do want to get as many results as possible and share them with you. So So just a plug on that. And then the only other thing that we wanted to touch upon were the site visits for the Rapid Response Collaborative. We scheduled some. We're a little concerned that there's a lack of response to them for the most part, though. So one of the things, what we plan on doing is start calling some of you and trying to schedule some visits outside of the little grid that we put together, because we want to go to as many hospitals as possible to see what you're doing, your best practices. I'll repeat again and again, they're definitely not like a joint commission survey. It's just us trying to understand what certain hospitals are doing right and what other hospitals that may be having some barriers are doing that maybe we can help them with. So they're really more very informal, informational, and just to help you. So, and then the only other things that we want to let you know, SBAR communication, we had a last conference call in a series of three on July 16th. Actually, New York Presbyterian Hospital gave us a huge amount of their SBAR tools, which we're going to be putting on the Jenny website. They're all tailored toward the perinatal setting, so it's really useful information, and we're going to be putting that up there this week, and then we'll send you the link to them. And that's pretty much it, other than the data. If anyone did not get a data report, we apologize, and if you want to just shoot me an email and let me know if you didn't get it at your hospital, and then we can send you one. So we could probably wrap it up here, but we'll just open it up one last time, operator, to see if there's any last comments before we sign off.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, press the number one key on your touchtone telephone. And we do have a question from Elise Gordon. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering on our hospital, the time, the length of stay, that the length of time that we are on a rapid response call. I just wanted to know what the average is for the other hospitals, because we have a designated nurse from 7 a to 7 p, and I just wanted to know what the difference in the amount of time that they were actually spending on the call.
So you want to know the encounter time for the entire collaborative?
Yeah, like an average, because it says on the bottom how it should not exceed 30 minutes, yeah. Or it should, you know.
And one thing, we should make a note that Kathy Duncan has said that a few times, so that's not in the literature other than from IHI has said that.
Okay.
Preliminary findings. But what we don't I don't have that at the top of my head right now, but we can see if we can get you just an aggregate encounter time for the collaborative for each month.
Okay, that would be great.
That's what it sounds like, kind of like how we have it for the mortality and the code data, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think that should be a problem, but we're putting together a list, and we'll speak with the data person about some of these changes.
Okay, great.
You could do that. I just want to put in the proviso that just because Kathy Duncan says it's 30 minutes, that doesn't mean it applies everywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, if somebody says, all right, it's 30 minutes, I'm walking away, and there's nobody else available to take care of the patient, that wouldn't be
right.
Good.
Right, which is why we have a much greater time that we spend at the
sure.
site.
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Carolyn Hoffman. Your line is over.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have any questions.
Okay. Thank you.
And I show no further questions in the queue.
Okay, well, thanks so much, everyone, for sticking it out this whole time. We hope you enjoyed the rest of your summer, and we'll be talking more with you individually and on the next conference call in September.
Okay.
Thanks.
Great. Thank
Bye.
You.
Thanks
Thank
all.
You. Thank
and
you
please
all.
Respond. We want to come visit you.
Who is this?
This is Mark. No, we want to do these site visits.
We do.
Please, get me out of Manhasset. Okay. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's program. This does conclude the conference. You may now disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.